alcoholic is a person whose drinking interferes with any major department of his or her life on a continuing basis.
And we find that an honest look at alcoholism indicates to us that it can affect men as well as women. Management, non-management, educational levels have absolutely nothing to do with it. It is an illness that can strike any level.
The disease of alcoholism, the nature of it is such that one drink leads to another. It's an old hacksaw that, you know, one drink is too many and a thousand's not enough.
The Garner Ted Armstrong Program. Radio and television commentator Garner Ted Armstrong examines the often misunderstood disease of alcoholism. If someone you love has a drinking problem, here's to that last drink.
Hi, sorry I can't offer you one from the bar. You could probably have anything you want from a salty dog to a cold beer at a bar well-stocked like this one, typical of tens of thousands of them in the United States and around the world. It is a shocking statistic to discover that the average American drinker consumes 4 gallons of pure ethyl alcohol every year. Translated, that means an average of about 2.5 bottles of beer a day, or about a fifth of whiskey a week. There's a serious problem in these United States affecting government, all the trades, business, industry, the average worker, and all the way into education and even the clergy, of serious alcoholism. And this program is to discuss that problem. Not just the casual drinking at sports and cocktail parties and in bars such as this, but also the serious alcoholism problem of about 10 million Americans. Most people unfortunately think of the alcoholic as the skid row wino who can be seen maybe sleeping it off underneath the bridge by the freeway. That isn't what we want to talk about, because that only represents about 1 to 3% of the actual problem. We want to talk instead in this program about alcoholism at all levels, affecting both sexes and at all ages, from the elderly clear down to early and preteens. We want you to hear what the medical professional people are going to say about it, what the families of alcoholics say, what the alcoholics themselves say, including teenagers who became alcoholic very early, even at age 13. This is not a crusade against drinking, nor is it an attempt to glamorize drinking in a black velvet bottle or perhaps the gusto of life that you should seize before it gets away from you about age 40 or whatever. Instead, it's intended to be an objective, in-depth look at the problem affecting 10 million Americans of alcoholism. First, let's take a look at casual drinking and ask, why do people come to bars to drink?
People come to a bar for several reasons. Some people come into a bar to drink, some people come into a bar to look. You're classified as the drinkers and the lookers. Some people just come in to get drunk.
I just didn't believe in social drinking. A can of beer or a cocktail or something like that seemed totally ridiculous if you're not gonna get drunk and drink.
And of course my concept of what an alcoholic was a skid row bum, and I didn't fit that. And I begin to think in terms of the fact that, you know, that life had dealt me a dirty deal, and that's why I drank.
When you become finally addicted to alcohol, it's just, it becomes a whole new ball game, where you just lose control completely. It's, you know, it's no longer your choice to stop or start. You can't. Your body craves the junk.
We are people who are truly diseased with life, and we turn to alcohol to make us feel better. And I would have rather died than tell you that I had a drinking problem or that I was unable to meet life's daily problems. I would have, you know, fought you all day long on that issue. Well, I get up and go to work every day, you know. I earn a good salary. I keep a nice home. I manage my life. But I needed alcohol to do it, and that bothered me.
Take bartenders, for instance. Most bartenders don't drink. Mainly because of the fact that they've been behind the bar for so many years, they've seen what the alcohol does to the people on the other side, and they don't want to see themselves in that state.
The nature of the dependence upon alcohol by alcoholics is not fully understood as yet. Whether it's physiological, meaning from the very body and the cellular tissues itself, or whether psychological dependence because of pressures and stress. It is looked on by many people as a weakness, a lack of willpower, or even immoral and a sin. But increasingly, people are beginning to understand the problem because more and more it's coming to be known and to be classified as a disease.
We don't know the cause of alcoholism as we don't know the cause of many illnesses. But terming it a disease allows us to use a methodology to combat it. And that's why I favor that that concept.
Was the disease concept of alcohol slow in evolving?
Yes, it was. And it's still resisted by many who feel that alcoholism is some kind of a personal or social aberration. Has no place, and indeed many doctors still feel this way, that it has no place in legitimate medicine. Many physicians fail to appreciate the use of alcohol in the patient's history, particularly if it's a patient who seems to fit a stereotype, a nice, honest-looking, innocent, virtuous patient who wouldn't do anything but sip tea, yet who knows what's happening on the weekend or under stress and so forth.
Recent studies have shown that heavy drinking can be linked to very serious diseases, among them cirrhosis of the liver, gastritis, ulcers, pancreatitis, heart disease, cancer, especially the type of cancer you'd associate with the mouth, pharynx, larynx, esophagus, liver, and so on. But unfortunately, because of the large number of deaths, including heart disease, that are occurring every year in the United States from these and other various illnesses, it's totally impossible to calculate the number of deaths that are attributable, at least in part, if not totally, to alcoholism simply because of so many other symptoms.
To date, no one has clearly identified a cause in the sense that no particular cellular abnormality or enzyme abnormality or genetic abnormality has been revealed. That really allows for consistent testing. So we're without right now a specific, what we call in medicine, etiology. Each person must be looked upon as an individual. Alcoholism is everywhere. You'll find it in the macho types, the effeminate types, the athletes, the withdrawn. And I know of no group, the cultural group, religious group, that has been spared the ravages of alcoholism.
The most widespread drug addiction in the world is alcoholism. An occasional drink can be a welcome refreshment. But if you choose to drink, drink responsibly. And if someone you love has a drinking problem, you can help. For useful information on effective treatments for alcoholism, be sure to request this free booklet, Alcoholism. For your free copy, call 800-423-4444. Toll free. That's 800-423-4444.
I drank over 10-fifths a day. And my daggone reputation is known on this street for almost 30 years.
I have no idea how much I drank in a day. I just drank and drank and drank and drank. And that's 24 hours a day. It's not just 2 or 3 hours. I mean, I drink.
I've got a headache, and another drink is going to kill me. But if I get off of it 2 weeks, I'm all right. But if I keep drinking, I'm going to keep fouling up.
I have a beautiful woman, and I have five children, but that's no excuse for me. They left me.
Another misconception is that a lot of people think the alcoholics are found either on Skid Row or maybe in a bar like this where they spend all their waking moments just tippling and drinking away like the proverbial barroom souse. Well, this is not true. Statistics prove it is not true. Alcoholics are anywhere and everywhere, and mostly they're found in the home. They're men and women, young and old, married and single, divorcees, widows, what have you. And they can be found anywhere from the clergy and psychologists, marriage counselors, housewives, managers, factory workers, politicians, executives, you name it. Alcoholism can be anywhere and everywhere, and usually is, because it knows few boundaries.
My name is Bob. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I'm 19 years old. I started using drugs and alcohol about 12 years old.
My name is Dee Dee. I'm 15 and I'm an alcoholic, and I started drinking when I was 12. Kind of, I wouldn't call it socially. I always drank to get drunk, but I drank for peer pressure to be in the group.
My name's Sally. I'm an addict, alcoholic, and I started when I was 12.
I started using drugs first, and I found that alcohol was just as good.
Most of the people that I hung around with and associated with drank and smoked pot and drop pills or whatever to get high. You know, it wasn't a thing where you sit down and have wine with your dinner, you know.
I'm Tim, and I'm 17, and I guess what got me involved in alcoholism is there's like a mystique about it. Like everyone's going, like you see it on TV, the elegant people sipping beer, and there's like a big romantic thing about it, and I looked at it, I saw it in my parents, I saw it on TV.
The use of alcohol, after all, is really something we learn, and we learn by example. And as youngsters, as children, we see how our parents respond to the use of alcohol, the happiness it creates in them, the ability to conquer pain, to give courage, and so forth. And this is quickly learned and picked up, and the kids begin to use it that way, and then you learn. It's one of those drugs that you can do, it'll do anything you want it to do.
My mother and my father were both alcoholics, and when I started drinking, my attitude totally changed. I was totally belligerent, fighting all the time in school. My grades went straight down. Me and my mother would have fights like cat and dogs constantly. You know, I needed more freedom, that would be it, or I needed more clothes or anything, just away from reality totally.
Alcoholics themselves and professionals in the field of alcoholism oftentimes speak of the quote-unquote addictive personality. What is meant by this term?
I think that they're referring to the individual who is generally very needy, very dependent, very often an individual who cannot handle anger, handle any kind of an emotional upheaval, cannot handle rejection, cannot handle any kind of a everyday emotional stress, cannot handle even responsibility. And this is an individual that, rather than face these types of situations, will defer to the use of a drug.
I couldn't handle facing reality. A lot of family problems, father always gone. Couldn't communicate in school. I wasn't interested in all the things the kids in school were interested in.
I know for me, I was never really satisfied with life. I was always looking for something more, something better. And it's like the second I drank, I got away from those feelings.
I con myself, you know, I'm drinking because of my mother or because of my father or because of the school I'm going to or because I don't have enough friends. By that time, I had lost all my friends. I was kind of a loner. And I conned myself and rationalized every reason I could think of just to drink.
Oh, I conned myself all the time. I told myself that I was normal and that I was just drinking. You know, it was okay. It was for fun. You know, everybody drinks like this. You know, everybody drinks two bottles of vodka or so, you know. It's normal. It's okay for me.
So I think that the young people con themselves like I did for a long time and say, I'm too young, you know. I'm only 15, you know. I've got a whole life to drink. All that romantic drinking, you know, so-called, quote, right? And it wasn't romantic drinking. It was, you know, sheer hell.
I couldn't get up to go to school. There was no way possible, because I had such a hangover in the morning that I couldn't possibly get up to go to school.
I never really had a good time. You know, it always ended up, I was either puking or I would black out, which is loss of memory, and end up in a place where I really didn't want to be or didn't know where I was.
I came down after a party, and my life was in shambles, you know. Like, I hadn't been to school in 3 days, and I have to get an absence slip. I had lost 4 of my coats, and I had nothing to wear to school. I felt all uptight and confused, and I just life didn't have any meaning, and it was like an empty thing for me. And the more I used, the deeper that got,
Well, I did not drink just to be social. I drank to get drunk because that's what I thought you were supposed to do.
I was depressed for about 4 months one time. I would lock myself up in my room and I would just sit there and look out the window. I wouldn't even turn on the radio or anything. I didn't want no phone calls, no nothing. And maybe at night I'd go out and get loaded. You know, I'd come back home and I'd go to school. I was a zombie. You know, I was living in the past then. And then I finally began to pull myself out and I lived in the future. Well, when I'm 18, it's going to be better. Or when I'm 21 and I can drink and not have to worry about getting phony ID or getting busted, you know. Or when I get my license, I'm going to split. You know, it was always that thing of when I get my license, you're never going to see me. Because I didn't like myself. I didn't have friends. And the more I drank, the more friends I lost and the more I hated myself and the things I did to myself. Mainly it's a process of, I think, suicide.
What would you say to a parent who says, well, my kid, I think he's got an alcohol problem. I can help him solve it.
I'd say don't try to do it alone because you're only hurting him and yourself because it's a long road. And to do it alone is just, what if he slips? You're going to feel that it's all your fault and you're not going to try again. You have to get him into some kind of rehabilitation plan where he can get help from a lot of people.
Sure, you go through I went through 2 weeks of shakes and withdrawals and feeling kind of sick inside and scared and lonely, you know, but I had people to back me up. I had hundreds of people to back me up and say it's going to be all right. As soon as you go through this part, then the next step is just learning how to live sober. You know, learning how to live in reality instead of always in the make-believe.
Dr. Kleinman, is alcohol an addictive drug in the sense that heroin is?
In a pharmacologic sense, I mean in a drug sense, certainly it is. By that I mean that it takes more and more alcohol to produce the effects that you want, just as it does with heroin. And then finally, once you've attained the alcohol level that you're looking for here, for the particular effect, once you stop, you experience withdrawal symptoms usually, just as you do with heroin.
When I was coming down from heroin and alcohol, I didn't feel that I would make it there for a while because it's really painful. And there are a lot of cases where people can't make it cold turkey, and there's many, many detox centers that'll help you.
Detoxification for us means is the process by which a patient who's been drinking is allowed to clear the alcohol and the period afterwards, the withdrawal period, in other words, when the patient's going to become excited and tremulous, not all patients do, of course, that we will be able to observe this patient and be sure that no other illness or disease is being masked. In other words, something like an pneumonia or tuberculosis. We have 3 patients on our ward this morning with tuberculosis, for example. An acute heart attack, an acute subdural hematoma, in other words, a blood clot on the brain. These are all conditions that are often missed because the examining doctor or other professional fails to realize that other things that can happen to alcoholics besides just the problems from the drinking.
If you have a problem with alcoholism, and of course one of the biggest problems of all is coming to admit or even suspect that you do, or any friend of yours or a family member, it's about time you found out about the very wide variety of services available to you. Many hospitals, for instance, have treatment wards and complete with detoxification wards, as you heard just a few moments ago. But there are many community-based facilities where you can get the education, the treatment, and the counseling you might need. The question is where to begin. And so far as I'm concerned, the average person would feel so embarrassed to even admit they have such a problem that they would like to keep it underground, kid themselves they don't have it, so they never even take the step to make that first telephone call. Well, you ought to look up in the white pages for the office nearest you of the National Council on Alcoholism. They're in the white pages in your telephone book. You know, by calling alcoholism a disease and removing some of the stigma of weak willpowers or perhaps the sin syndrome of some of the churches of the country, there has come a great change in business and industry. Did you know that some large corporations have instituted their own alcoholics programs where they serve the alcoholism on their own staff by identifying, first of all, who is the alcoholic, and then getting about the business of trying to correctly treat the individual. After all, 1 out of 10 laborers is an alcoholic or has a severe problem, and that mounts up to a cost of somewhere between $10 to $15 billion of dollars a year for American industry.
Our statement of policy is very general, and yet it indicates exactly what we want to say, that our company is not telling its employees that they shouldn't drink. whether they drink or not is entirely up to them. However, if their use of alcohol interferes with their ability to be on the job and perform on the job, then as a company, we are concerned and want to do something about it.
As an administrative advisor in Pacific Telephone's medical department, Otto Willeman works as an alcoholism educator and counselor for the company's employees in the Los Angeles area. As is the case with many who hold similar positions in other companies, Otto Willeman is himself a recovering alcoholic.
Primarily, the services that the medical department provides in Pacific Telephone Company is evaluation and referral. We do not do treatment per se in the medical department. However, we do counsel with employees. We help employees identify the problems, and we refer these individuals to proper avenues of help. The industry in general is doing more about the rehabilitation of employees because they're realizing that they have an investment in employees that can be salvaged. And the last thing that we want to do is lose one of our employees. We want to retain them. An honest look at alcoholism indicates to us that it can affect men as well as women, management, non-management, educational levels have absolutely nothing to do with it. It is an illness that can strike any level.
In the case of Pacific Telephone, Otto Willeman regularly speaks to small groups of employees and managers at all levels, informing them about alcoholism and about the company's policy and program. Employees know where they can come for help, and managers know what to do if they spot what appears to be an alcohol problem on the job.
In my talks, I encourage you as a manager to call me if something of this nature happens. And I would guide you with regard to how to approach this individual's deteriorating performance. One of the things I would encourage you not to do is to talk to him about his drinking problem, because you as a manager are sort of a novice at alcoholism, and you would be talking to an alcoholic who is a professional. And believe me, he would con your shoes off of you. And so I would encourage you to deal specifically with work performance and provide the avenue of help of counseling. Encourage the employee to come into this department for counseling so that we could help him to identify the problem and refer him out to proper help.
The track record had shown that basic education as to first the nature of alcoholism, what it is, what causes it, and what it's all about, and secondly, the wide variety of services available, were really making inroads in the alcoholism problem in at least this one very large corporation. We have here a booklet on the subject of alcoholism I hope you will write for right away, or better yet, you can call to the toll-free numbers 800-423-4444. It can be a real head start if you've got a problem. This will come to your address. It's merely a brochure, a booklet on the entire subject worldwide, talking about the family that drinks together, a lot of interesting articles, you might say, compacted together in one booklet and representing a great deal of research. But it's readable. You can read it in one sitting in a few moments in your home. For this free booklet, you can dial right now. The toll-free number is 800-423-4444, or if you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, dial area 213. The number is 577-5225. Once again, those numbers, 800-423-4444, or area 213. The number is 577-5225.
I tried drinking with him. I tried not drinking with him. I tried getting rid of the liquor, and just bought more so that didn't work.
I took the checkbook away from her, took all the money away from her, credit cards, everything for a period of time, to no avail. Then I felt, well, I was wrong in doing this. Now she had no feeling of responsibility whatsoever, so I gave them back.
The children would say, Mom, why can't you stop him from drinking? And they'd say, he loves you, he'll stop for you. But he wouldn't stop because he loved me. He wasn't capable of doing it, and yet he still loved me, he said.
Few people seem to think that the families of alcoholics are generally as disturbed as the alcoholic himself may be. But there are organizations, believe it or not, that are specifically designed just to serve and to help the families of alcoholics, and to tell them how to solve the problem as best they can, or at least to give the aid and the help that the person, the member of their family, needs. It's not hard to find such an organization. Again, you should refer to the National Council on Alcoholism in the White Pages, because they can refer you to an organization which will give you the kind of help you as a family member might need. Believe it or not, those organizations can show you that oftentimes what you may have been doing through perhaps pity or guilt or even anger or shame might have been precisely the wrong thing.
Taking the liquor away from them is useless. Marking the bottles, hiding it, this accomplishes nothing.
As long as we make it easy for him to drink, then he'll drink. If he writes bad checks and we cover up for him, then there's no reason for him to look at himself and say, what is this doing to me?
I was able to release my wife with love. As far as loving her, I still hated the alcoholism and resented that part of it. But also, I recognized that I had no control over her drinking at this point. And I had no responsibility for it.
It's what we call tough love. It's, I've heard it described that if your alcoholic comes home some night and he falls out on the front lawn, do you go and drag him in and put him to bed and make him comfortable so that when he wakes up he'll be nice and cozy and comfortable? No, in tough love you step over that body, let him lay there. If you don't want him to get pneumonia, you may put a blanket over him, but you don't. You let him wake up and see what he did.
It has been proved time and again that our social attitudes are primarily responsible for the alcoholism problem in the United States. The tolerant attitude of mild stages of inebriation, the tens of thousands of jokes, I suppose, that have been told over the years about various stages of drunkenness. After all, a tremendous number of the marriages in the United States began in a bar room, an awful lot of conversation, an awful lot of sports watching, and it's part and parcel of our American way of life. The macho mystique of sharing cocktails and drinking, and especially the challenge of young people who watch their parents drink to tipple a little bit at home and find out what it's like to get drunk. The one for the road in the bar before going home after a hard day's work. These and many, many other symptoms in our American society lead eventually, because of other factors, primarily perhaps stress, and psychological factors, including tragedies in the family, divorce and what have you, toward alcoholism. If you have a problem, first begin to wonder if you have and admit it to yourself. If you know someone who has a problem, especially in your own family or close circle of friends, then do yourself a favor. First, it's important to educate yourself. Write for the book that we've told you about. That's the first step. Pick up the telephone directory and look in the White Pages for the National Council on Alcoholism and get the education you need. But above all, seek help.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.